Standout with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Tomáthan McIntyre. Tomás is from Ballyfermot in County Kerry. Tomás's love for ultra-long-distance cycling began in 2016, when having just finished a college course in Galway. Tomás was at a crossroads in his life. He had been considering taking a year out when his friend told him about his plan to cycle across the United States. Though he had only got into serious cycling a few years beforehand, Tomás decided to join him. Somewhere along the 5,000-kilometre journey between San Diego and Florida, he felt something spark inside him. Now he has gone on to cycle hundreds of thousands of miles around the world in places like Australia, New Zealand, Cairo, South Africa and Vietnam, just to name a few. Sit back and enjoy the show. Kamir, thanks so much for coming on today. How are you?
Good, yeah. A bit tired there now after today's effort, but yeah, a bit of recovery now and get more water into myself and be ready to go again tomorrow.
What's the what is the recovery like after a long cycle? Is it like stretching, foam rolling, or?
I wish. Find AC or a fan and get away from the sun. And just get a heap of water and food into myself, and that's about it then.
We were talking there before we went on air. It's up near 30 degrees, is it?
Yeah, it's Southeast Asia, and it's only getting hotter because April, May are the hottest months here. So, like when I get to Thailand there now in a couple of weeks, it'll be close to 35, 40 degrees every day, I'd say. So, and then add in humidity on top. It's the humidity that kills you. You know, it's you'd get used to the dry heat after a few weeks, but it's the humidity. Just anywhere you go, if you're just walking around the place, you're sweating. So. You're better to stay inside as much as you can and get AC,
especially when you're after a long cycle. We're hoping for that weather in Ireland, and then over there it's nearly too hot for you.
I'd almost book a ticket home just to experience some cold weather again and fly back out here then again back to warm.
chill out in the bit of a cold weather in Ireland. When did you arrive in Indonesia?
Just about 10 days ago, I'd say. It's a short country to get through. I spent the last 2 months in Indonesia. It's a much bigger, it's full of islands to navigate and stuff. But Malaysia's awkward because it's split into two. You've got mainland Malaysia, which I'm on now, which is between Singapore and Thailand. And then off the coast of Singapore, you've an island, Borneo, it's called, but it's got three countries on it. You got Malaysia, a bit of Indonesia, and then another small country called Brunei. But I'm after taking the most uninspiring route through Malaysia. I'm just kind of hugging the west coast and on the busier highways. So every day is just trying to dodge traffic and pan flat roads. So hopefully in the next day or two when I start to feel better, I'll head into the mountains and maybe change over to the east coast,
change up the plan a bit. I like to bring on my guests, I suppose, back to the start of their childhood growing up. Do you want to, I suppose, paint the picture for the listeners? What were you like growing up? Were you mad into cycling then, or was it other sports, or what were you like?
I played like any kid back at home. I was big into football, Gaelic football, playing with an Gaeltacht. But I didn't start cycling until I was 17. I think up until then I was probably one for the computer games and the Xboxes and the PlayStations and things like that. And I'd always been playing football, played a bit of soccer, and I even tried a bit of rugby as well. But it was once I took off cycling, I just knew it was made for me, because you're your own boss. You can take off whenever you want. You can go where you want, go as fast or slow as you want, and you can ride as many miles as you want or little miles as you want. And it also allowed me to explore a lot more Kerry in my own backyard and a lot of Ireland as well. And then, from there, from 17, 18, the addiction kind of took off, and that's when I guess, started this kind of a world cycle trip that's worked out since then.
That's what.
When I was younger, I never watched it on the television. Never, I remember riding to the beaches and stuff with my friends when I was younger. You know, most households in Ireland have bicycles and things like that. But I think once I hit my teenage years, I got out of it. And then, yeah, it was only the latter teenage years I got back into it again. And since then, that's what, about 10 years ago, I haven't stopped.
I was reading, actually, I don't know, it was an article on the Independent. They said, I think it was this, 2016, you finished your college course. Were you in Galway? Were you going to be a teacher or were you studying?
Yeah, I was up in UC at what's it now? NUIG. And I was there for a few years doing my, I did arts, history and Irish. And yeah, I'd always planned to go teaching. But I decided to take a gap year and I went off and cycled across America. And that was the end of college. And I kind of started the whole adventure trip. And
was it your friend that came up with the idea?
Sorry, say that again.
Was it your friend that came up with the idea to cycle across the USA?
Yeah, so I was working at home. I had a couple of different jobs, but I was helping out a friend, and he's running at the Osong County Bale across the road, and he's big into his cycling. He's gone big into the Ironmans and all that kind of stuff, and he does crazier things than I do now. But I was chatting to him one day, and he was telling me how he was looking into the cycle route across the States. So I got him to send me on the information, and I think that night I looked at it and it looked perfect, and I booked it. And that was the southern tier, kind of across from San Diego to Florida. So he, in fairness, he gave me that route.
From San Diego to Florida, something sparked kind of in between that you kind of really got into, did it?
Yeah, just that journey, I guess, was just an eye-opener, you know? I guess I was able to see what life is like when you strip it back to its most basic form of just concentrating on finding food, water, and a place to sleep every night, you know? I guess all other kind of concerns and all that are thrown out the window. And you're just riding your bike every day, and every day you're seeing something different and something new. And I guess when you're traveling lands you've never seen before, it's just that excitement every day of kind of what, you know, what's lying around the corner. And then it was about a year and a half before I took off on my next adventure, and that was down the length of Africa. That was the big one. That was 2018, 2019. I did the bike ride from Egypt to South Africa. That was, I think, about 10,000 kilometers in 7 months. And I guess that's when I really just fell in love with this kind of lifestyle.
You kind of said that was for you then. I was reading on that same article, you found that almost in every town you ended up in, there was always kind of someone willing to let you stay there, was it?
They'd always help you out and stuff, you know. And if there wasn't, you know, if there wasn't accommodation available, you'd easily be able to find somewhere to stay. Or Egypt now was a bit more difficult because the police kind of the police had more in a say of where you could go and where you couldn't go.
Really?
So most of the time the police would escort me into the town, like a car in front of me. It seems ridiculous, like a car in front of me, a car behind me, about 8 officers all armed with AK-47s, the sirens going 90 into the town, you know. And they're kind of like, they say they do it for your safety, but then they're kind of announcing to the whole town that, you know, that someone special is coming in. And then it's just some random Kerry fella cycling into town who's all hot and sweaty from another basking day of Egyptian heat. And then they fire off at a hotel, and they're camping out. You know, an officer sits outside your hotel room all night, and if you want to go out get food, they'll walk you to the whatever restaurant, and they'll sit down beside you with the AK over their shoulder. And I guess that's what it must feel like living in America every day, you know.
It's far from the Gaeltacht. When you started doing the cycling, were you kind of going, I suppose, were you going along with, say, like a map, or was it on Google Maps that you kind of depended on at the start?
There's a few different apps you can use. So America, I had actual just like old style maps. But you're nowadays, I mean, you can download so many different apps and stuff. And even today now, you know, fast forward 7 years later, and I just, you know, you go north, east, west, or south, and as long as you're heading in that direction, you know you're not going to go too far astray.
Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or drop me an email on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to come. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with ultra-long-distance cyclist Tomás McIntyre. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section after the show, or you'll be able to get this interview as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. After going from California down to or San Diego to Florida, when you went on from, I suppose, Cape Town to South Africa, when was the first time, I suppose, between them years that you actually got to come home from? So I remember, I don't know what year it was, seeing a picture, you came home and there was a big crowd outside the pub welcoming you home. When was that?
Yeah, that was after Africa. The village got together and they had a big homecoming for me, which was lovely. That was May 2019. So that was a lovely few days, those days were. It's mad when the whole kind of community comes together I guess when I set off on this adventure, like going across America, I never thought that the trips would gather such an interest and that people would be so supportive. I just thought, because look, cycling is not the biggest sport back at home, you know, we're all GA mad and rugby mad, and you know, cycling is way down on the list of favorites for people. And you know, when I came home from Africa at that time, and you know, the whole village got together, there was a big kind of party atmosphere, they had fireworks, you know, it was just incredible. And when you see things like that happen, I just always love the support I get from locals. And since day one, they've supported me from day one, no matter how ridiculous or stupid or crazy my ideas are, or how long I want to cycle for. Doesn't matter where I want to go, you know, they'll always back me, they'll always send me messages, they'll always check in with me to make sure I'm doing okay. And anytime I've gone home, you know, they're always asking a million questions of where I've been, and you know, they're always asking when am I going to head off again. So it's great to, I guess, be able to show people the world through the eyes of a slow moving cyclist, because I don't cover like a whole lot of miles every day, or I don't travel very fast, you know. So I'm glad that they can all enjoy it as well.
Absolutely, it just goes to show what community means, I suppose. Did you know that they were having that homecoming when you came back from South Africa, or was it a big surprise?
I didn't realize it was going to be that big, you know, as in like so when I came back, I decided to cycle home from Tralee because I raised money for the Donald Walsh Live Life Foundation. So it was just kind of a nice way to end the fundraiser and also get to cycle with a lot of people who would have followed my trip, and get to cycle with Finbar and get to see the Walshes in Tralee as well before I left. And then, yeah, cycling into the village and seeing the crowds of people, you know, lining up from one end of the village to the other. All the kids outside the school, you know, my old primary school. And it was just, I think I actually started crying at the end, because I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, I'm just some bloke on a bike, you know, and they've gone to so much effort to kind of, I guess, celebrate the occasion with me. And it was definitely one of the biggest highlights of my life, and it'll definitely forever remain one of the biggest highlights of my life.
It's great to know that the people are behind you as well. And I was reading, as of 2017, you raised, I think it was $15,000 for the Donald Walsh Live Life Foundation. Was there a certain reason that you chose that? Was it because Donald was from Kerry, or did you have your own mental health struggles, or was there a particular reason?
Like anyone, I have my up and down moments even while I'm traveling. But I think when I did the America trip, I was 22, and you know, if there isn't a family at home that hasn't, that depression hasn't come into the households, whether it be, you know, your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, uncles, aunts, any cousins, anything like that. And, you know, Donal left in a very important legacy, and it's always important to continue those conversations. And I guess being at that particular age as well, of being 22, crossing America, and 24, crossing Africa, I kind of wanted to show people as well that, you know, we can go out and achieve whatever we want to achieve as well, and that, you know, we don't have to be perfect to do anything that we want to do. And yeah, just also just wanting to continue the conversation of that, you know, it's okay not to feel okay, you know, and to continue Donald's words and just live life as much as we can while we can, because, you know, none of us get a second chance at it.
Absolutely. I actually done a talk with Elma Walsh, Donald's mom, last week in Killarglen. Do you know, whenever you have a, like you said, we all have our own rough days, we all have our own way of dealing with it. For myself, it's throwing a pair of headphones to go out for a walk. Do you find that cycling is like a form of therapy for you when you need to clear the head?
Yeah, definitely, you know. I've got quite good at zoning out when I need to zone out, because sometimes you just need to let those vices just have their punch up in your head, you know. And I've got good at zoning, like if I'm in a busy area, I can zone out traffic, like cycling through Indonesia with all the people shouting at me and all the attention you're getting. I can just kind of just focus, when you just need to focus on yourself. I've got quite a lot better at looking after myself mentally. These trips do get quite lonely at times, and when you leave negative thoughts set into your head, you know, I don't have mom or dad here to put their hand around my shoulder and tell me everything's going to be okay. I can call them whenever I want, obviously, but, you know, to have that human touch beside you or whatever, I don't really get to have that much while I'm on my travels. So I've had to kind of deal with these issues on my own a lot as well, which is good for me, because it's allowed me to grow as a person and to become a stronger person. And, you know, a lot of the time I just cry, even while I'm cycling. Even yesterday I was kind of having an up and down day. I was, like I said, like I think I said to you before we got on air, that I'm kind of just getting over a bit of an illness, and I was racing on a Kuala Lumpur, and I didn't know, I was humming and hawing about what to do, and I just kind of just woke up in a bit of a negative mood. And on my way out of the city, there was heaps of traffic and the roads were confusing, and it was really hot because I left late, and all these things were just getting to you, and that sense of loneliness came back, and that sense of, oh, I could just be sitting at home with my family, you know, in front of the fire, watching a movie, talking crap to local people, just, you know, just doing normal things. And, you know, I eventually, as I was pedaling away, I just had a bit of a cry, and I always find that helps. Anytime I feel that I need to cry, I just cry and let it out. Or if I need to listen to some music, or if I just need to pull over at the side of the road and close my eyes and kind of just put myself into happier thoughts, you know.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Joe. I remember when I was in hospital, I was the same. I found the only way to get away that for stress was have a good cry. Like there's nothing wrong with it. Moving on to New Zealand, that was, I suppose, the next part of your travels. You flew into Auckland in 2020, was it?
Yeah, January 2020, so two months before COVID.
Oh, jeez. What was, going in? You kind of thought that to be the most straightforward journey, did you?
Oh yeah, sure. I thought I'd be there for 2 months. It's a kind of a quick Australia, New Zealand. When I left home that time, I worked out that I probably didn't have enough money saved to cycle home nonstop. So I knew I'd have to stop and work. So I was just like, right, the less time I spend between New Zealand and Australia, because you can always go back to those countries, I was just like, the better. So I set aside 5 months between the two countries, and I think I was there. I think I was in New Zealand, Australia for about 3 years, or just, I think two years and 11 months in the end, I think, before I left Australia.
Serious?
I guess my original plan just didn't work out whatsoever, all purely down to COVID, you know. But then I got to spend COVID in New Zealand, which I guess you know, at the time was probably heaven to a lot of other countries, because we, I guess, New Zealand being so far from anywhere, you know, the closest country is Australia, and it's a 3.5 hour flight away. It's the same as flying from Dublin to Poland, you know, that there is that much of a distance between New Zealand and Australia. So when Jacinda shut the country down and, I guess, locked us all into our open air prison of New Zealand, you know, it was just blissful, really. You know, we all got to work away. We got to have our few pints whenever we wanted to. We could explore the country. There was no tourists allowed in, so you didn't have to pre-book anything. You could just rock up on any given day and see all the different sites. And then, yeah, I think it took about 2 years for me to finish the New Zealand cycle. And when I did, I jumped across to Australia, did a bit of work there, did a bit of cycling, and then, yeah, flew on to Southeast Asia.
Now we're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to come in the next part of the show. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell. I'm here today with Kerry man and ultra-long-distance cyclist Tomasa McIntyre.
Now that I'm thinking back on it about the lockdown, didn't New Zealand impose like one of the most, I suppose, strictest lockdowns? In Ireland, you know, we were able to go out on our, I suppose, what was it, 5-10K away from our house. When New Zealand did have such a strict lockdown, did it take long before you were allowed to, say, I suppose, get out for a cycle or a walk?
No, we could walk, cycle, even from the day one of lockdown, we could go out for as long as we wanted. There was no
tourists.
Yeah, but there was no, like, you know, you don't go 5K within, or don't go 5K outside of your home, or 10K or anything like that, you know. I think there was no rules or stipulations like that. It was a lockdown. It was a hardcore lockdown. But I guess the biggest thing they did was they just closed the country off. So nobody, I know back at home, you know, the airports were left open, and, you know, people were still kind of in and out the whole time and stuff. But in New Zealand, they just shut the whole place down. And after about 8 weeks, but with it all in that 8 weeks, I was out cycling, walking. There was no, you can only go outside for an hour or two, you know. It was unlimited time. Obviously, you know, common sense came into it. You know, you couldn't go to your friend's house. You know, you weren't stopping in the street talking to other people. Going to the supermarket, I think it was maybe 2 people per household allowed in at a time. So you had your little bubbles and things like that, and they were only letting a certain amount of people in at any one time. But no, it never got like really, really strict. You know, we still had our bit of freedom. We could still go out and about. And then after, I think, 8 weeks, the COVID cases just plummeted. And then they reopened, and then you could travel domestically again. You could still even leave the country. Like, I mean, I could have left any time I wanted to, but the only problem was, as soon as I left that country, I wasn't getting back in again. And that was the biggest thing, you know. That I think that's where New Zealand probably got a bit of a bad rep for how they dealt with it, because it was so difficult, even for Kiwis. The same in Australia as well. Australia's lockdowns, I think, were a bit stricter, especially in Melbourne. But they had this kind of lottery system in New Zealand where Kiwis return, and you had to book your flights and all that in advance. So imagine if you had a family of 5 or 6, and you had to, whatever, buy everyone's tickets, and then, but you weren't guaranteed. So with the lottery system, you weren't guaranteed a place in the hotel quarantine. So if you didn't, if you weren't given your place on the dates that you booked your flights for, you have to go back to your airline and change all your flights again, go back into the lottery system, and then hope that you get in. And that, I think that's one of the reasons why Jacinda left the job recently. You know, she was under, I think she got a lot of hate for that. So, but the lockdowns were fine. We did 1 8-week lockdown in the initial lockdown, like the rest of the world. And then we had a second 2 week lockdown in August 21. And that was it then. That was it for us. Auckland had a good few lockdowns, all right, but that was just because they had most of the hotels for quarantine, and there was a few small outbreaks. But I was living down in the South Island, maybe 1,000 kilometers away, 1,500K. So we were fine. I was out in the countryside town. So
I suppose you being over there by yourself, and it's one thing having your family hundreds of thousands of miles away in Ireland, but to know that COVID is around and it could hit any family at one time. How did you feel about that, not being able to be there with your family?
Yeah, it didn't go down well with me, you know. I mean, often I'd lay awake at night thinking about going home. But then I guess, you know, I'd spoken to my family initially about it all, and they were kind of in the opinion that I should come home, because at that stage when COVID broke out, no one knew what was going to happen. But I was keen to, like, I had left home and I planned to stay away for a few years, and, you know, I said I'd try New Zealand and I'd see what would happen. That I'd always made sure that I had enough money in reserve just in case if I did have to fly home, you know. And but yeah, I mean, it was a massive concern of mine, you know, worrying about my family every day, because COVID did really take off in Ireland. Luckily, in the end, everyone was okay. But if anything had happened, I would have been on the first flight home. No doubt about that. I'd always been emailed by the embassy in New Zealand, who did an unbelievable job, you know, keeping us all up to date of what was going on and when flights were available, and if we ever wanted any assistance, or if we wanted to go home, just to contact them, and they'd arrange for us to get on the next flight possible, you know. So, and then you'd be home within 25-30 hours, so just over a day of traveling.
It's a lot of traveling to get from New Zealand. You were saying there that, to, I suppose, like you said, you had a few bob put away for yourself. Did you take any odd jobs over there, I suppose, or anywhere, like in any country that you do go to, would you take any few odd jobs just to support yourself in general?
Yeah, I worked in New Zealand while I was there, pretty much for almost the full 2 years, apart from the few little trips I did. And but I mean, like, it's an expensive country to live in, you know, and I was doing a bit of bar work and stuff like that, so it's not exactly the highest paying job. Look, it paid the bills. I got to save a small sum of money, but because, like I said, the country was open for most of COVID, all the pubs, cafes and stuff were open, so it was kind of just like normal life really for us at that stage. And I did a bit of work in Australia too, and I saved a bit more money there, and that's what I'm surviving off now. And but yeah, no, I'll be definitely looking to work again in the next few months someplace, whether I go, I don't know, maybe back home, back to Australia, back to New Zealand. There's always options. But it's nice to live abroad and to experience different places. You know, I got to live in a small, beautiful countryside town in New Zealand, and I got to live in one of the more popular touristy spots in Australia. I somehow ended up 15 hours inland from Brisbane in the depths of the outback, which was a very interesting and beautiful experience as well, because, you know, these things I hadn't planned on happening, or I hadn't imagined that would happen. So yeah, they were kind of nice little surprises during a bit of a bad time for the world.
And like you said there, when domestic travel did open up again from New Zealand, you hopped in your bike and made your way to Australia. Was that in around April time? Was it Queensland that you went to?
Yeah, so that was, I think I left New Zealand, might have been March 2021. About this time last year, I eventually finished the cycle. I didn't want to leave New Zealand till I rounded up the cycling, because, you know, that's what I'd gone there to do. And it's probably the main reason why I stayed in New Zealand for so long, was that I just wanted to finish my cycle trip there, because I don't like starting something and not getting to finish it. And then, yeah, I went across to Aussie, and I was actually cycling out to my job to the outback that time. But I guess it wasn't really part of my official cycle route for Australia, you know. I was just riding to my new job, because I just wanted to get my 3 months, you have to do 3 months regional work in Australia as a foreigner to get a second visa. So I guess while I was still kind of in work mode, I wanted to get that done first, because I said if I went back traveling, I'd be a bit lazy to go back to work then again, you know, because I'd just get the travel bug back after kind of a 2 year, you know, break due to COVID. So, but then I properly started my Australia cycle in October of last year. So I spent, I think, 6 weeks cycling from Sydney to Melbourne, and I did a bit of a loop around Tasmania as well, which is beautiful.
Was in Australia, obviously, it's known for different animals and reptiles, and like you said, you're out in the outback, and even when you were in other countries there in New Zealand, did you have any encounters with, I suppose, any wild animals like snakes or lions out in Australia or anything like that?
Not New Zealand. The worst in New Zealand would be the kea, this very intelligent bird. They can open up, they'd rip through tents and get to steal food. They've picklocked bloody camper vans to take food out of the camper vans and stuff. Australia, yeah, I saw a few snakes. Most of them are dead. I saw a couple of live ones, but the things with snakes is that they're just as scared as humans are as humans are of them. So once you stomp your feet, it's only if you mistakenly step on a snake that it'll probably bite you. You know, snakes don't hunt humans as prey. And then, yeah, there's crocodiles. Depends what you meet. If you meet a saltwater crocodile, they hunt humans. Freshwater crocodiles don't. Again, if you only somehow swim on top of one or jump in on top of one, that the worst you'll probably get is a headbutt. I don't think there's ever been any recorded killing from a freshwater crocodile. I had a few close calls with animals in Africa. Though Africa's a different ball game for most tins, but yeah, I had two close calls with lions there and elephants, and I think there was a pack of hyenas near my tent as well one night. And yeah, it's kind of some couple of terrifying moments, all right, where kind of, you know, your life flashes before your eyes and stuff. But thankfully, I survived to tell the tale.
It's a lot different seeing the blackbirds in Ireland. So
now stay tuned into Radio Kerry, because there's lots more to come in the last part of the show. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, the last part of the show here on Radio Kerry.
When you were doing so much travelling, before you finish up, I just want to touch on a few more things. Before you do go travelling, say when you went from New Zealand to Australia, how do you ship your bike over and your equipment separately, or are you able to bring it like on the plane, or how does it work?
No, I can take it on the plane. So what you do is you get a kind of a bicycle box. So just any bike shop will have them, you know, it's what the bikes come out of. And then you get one of those and you just kind of strip your bike down a small bit. You take the handlebar, you take them off, or you bend them in a small bit in line with the frame. Take the front wheel off, back wheel off, take the pedals off, and you just try protect it as much as you can with like foam or cardboard or bubble wrap or anything like that, you know. And the luggage, you can either just chuck in a suitcase, tear it up with you, or if you can, you can just fit it in with the bike as well. It kind of offers more protection as well, you know. So then you just hope for the best that the airline don't trash your bike. I've definitely had a few cases where someone's put their foot through my box purposely, because just their holes pop up in funny places, and you kind of look at the size of the hole and you're just like, yeah, that looks like a male human foot, all right.
You started sharing your journey kind of online on Twitter there. Now I've been following it for ages. You've nearly 5,000 followers. When did you decide, or did you mean to, I suppose, post updates? Did you want to share with the public, or was it just something you started putting up for friends and family?
I guess a bit of both, I'd say. Initially, it was, I mean, when I did the America trip, I was just putting up the odd post. And again, like I said, when I started the trips, I didn't think, you know, people would be interested in it, because, you know, you're just on a bicycle. But then I guess, yeah, after posting a bit, and people seemed to be interested in what I was doing and where I was going and what I was seeing and people I was meeting and stuff. And then kind of, you know, just with all the random stuff that happens to you and the people you get to meet along the way, the kind of all these interesting stories were beginning to happen and stuff. So, and then, yeah, just the interest build from there. And now I guess I have a core following from day one. So even if I had, you know, I've thought sometimes about not posting or cutting back and post. Like, I'm not as active as I probably was at the beginning, you know. Like, my Facebook at the moment is, I think I updated last night, it was back on January 10th. My diary is back in January. Twitter is probably the most up-to-date one, but that's only just because you can just put up a few small tweets. But yeah, it's always nice to keep people updated. And also, I've found social media to be quite beneficial to my trips as well, because I've actually got to meet a lot of people from social media. And then, you know, friends back at home or just random people who follow me who I even may not know will put me in touch with their friends or their family. Or, you know, they'll give me recommendations on places to go that, you know, if I'm, like, for now I'm cycling through Malaysia and people have been here already, so I've had friends from, like, New Zealand, Australia, anywhere, who will be like, oh, in Kuala Lumpur, go to such and such place, or you gotta meet this guy, he's in such a location, or whatever, you know. So yeah, it's definitely worth it if you're happy to put in the time to it. Like I said, I'm not as active as I once was, because sometimes you can just get too consumed by it. But I'll always, like, put up the odd post every now and again and upload some photographs, or if something interesting has happened, then I'll write about that, you know, because it might, you know, because people just find it interesting, because some people don't get to travel, some people are working all the time, or now they've got families and they can't get away. So, you know, I've had a lot of people message me saying that they love the way that I travel, they love my attitude to traveling, my positivity, or that they love the honesty of my posts, and that they get to see the world through my eyes, as, like I said earlier, as a slow moving cyclist. So it seems to bring a joy to people, and people find it interesting. So as long as that continues, I'll happily post about it.
And it just goes to show that's the good side to social media, and there's obviously a bad side then, but like you there now sharing your own story, that's the good side of it. Is there any I suppose country or city so far out of all the places you've been that I suppose stood out to you or that you liked the most?
Definitely, yeah. It's always hard to pick, because I've seen so many cool and beautiful and amazing places, but I mean, I'll probably say anywhere through Africa, because I guess Africa has a certain reputation of being dangerous, and yeah. And you know, a lot of people are, I guess, a bit afraid to travel there. But it's such an incredible time there. You know, going through countries like Sudan, where governments warn you against going to. I mean, I'd see these people who wouldn't let me put my hand in my pocket. They were paying for my food, my drinks. They were taking me in. They were letting me sleep in random places, and you know, they'd stop me at the side of the road to chat, and they give me food, water, whatever I needed, you know, and they wouldn't take no for, you know, just being Irish, like, you kind of, when people are giving you something or asking you if you want anything, you're like, ah, no, sure, I'm grand, I'll be fine. And they just don't take no for an answer, you know, and it's extremely heartwarming being at the receiving end of such goodness like that, and it kind of just makes you wonder. I don't want to be too critical of Western countries, but this makes you wonder, like, that we have everything we need in the West. We've got money, we've got jobs, we've got, you know, houses, you know, opportunity and stuff. And when you read about countries like Sudan, where, you know, the country's labeled the terror state and people are afraid to go there, and people are afraid of Sudanese people when they travel outside of Sudan and stuff. And when you get there, same in like places like Malawi, Egypt, Tanzania, you know, parts of Indonesia, just anywhere you go, you just, it's the people you meet that make the trip, you know. I've seen beautiful sights. I've seen like Victoria Falls, I've seen the pyramids, you know, I've seen all these incredibly beautiful places, but what I define, you know, the best that I've seen is through the people. And that's how I define places I go through now, is just these people you meet and how caring and considerate they are.
Goes to show the generosity of people. Are you would you be hesitant in planning things too far in advance, given your schedule and like how quickly things can change up?
Nowadays I just do, like, I always have an idea of, like, at the moment, like, I know I'm cycling up through Southeast Asia, so I know eventually I'll be going to Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam. China at the moment is just beginning to reopen, but it's still technically closed off. Definitely to someone on a bicycle. Myanmar has been closed off quite a while due to some internal conflict there. So you'll always have an idea, but in the short term, I just planned it. But like tomorrow now, I don't know where I'm going yet. I have two destinations in mind. So I might even just wait till tomorrow morning and see how I feel. But yeah, just nowadays I just take it day by day because things change, you know. Like I've been ill the last few days, so I'm not exactly feeling 100%. So tomorrow could even be a day off if I don't feel up to it, if it's too hot to cycle. But yeah, just day by day because things change, you know. The weather impacts your the traffic, how you're feeling, you know. And then yeah, I mean, I could wake up tomorrow and have a complete change of plan. And I guess that's the beauty of traveling like this, is you just have freedom to make so many different decisions. And sometimes I can be very indecisive as well, so it's not great that I'm like that, because sometimes I do struggle to make a decision, and then you kind of just flip a coin and say, ah, look, I'll just go this way. So
you decide by whatever side of the bed so you get out of the morning, you kind of decide then some mornings. Come here, thanks so much for coming on today now, and I appreciate your time, and I know people will enjoy hearing your story and following it. So thanks a million for coming on.
Yeah, not a bother, man, anytime at all. Thanks a million for having me.
All the best with the rest of your journey.
Cheers, Ian. Thank you very much, pal.
Now folks, unfortunately that's all we've time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in to my show as always. A massive thanks to Tomás for coming on today and sharing his own story about his story, I suppose, about cycling all around the world. And he's been to some unbelievable places and achieved great things throughout the last few years that he's been doing the ultra long cycling for. So a big thanks to him, and I hope you all enjoyed the show. If you have any questions or requests for next week's show, you can contact me through my Instagram, ianoconnell321, or drop me an email on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. I hope you're all having a great week so far, and you're enjoying the long evenings, because it makes some difference to your own head and my own mental health in general, having the extra few hours brightness in the evening, so you can go out for a walk with the dog, or even out for a jog if you're feeling more fit. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.